Thank you for joining us for today's COVID-19 daily update. I'm pleased to be joined by Dr. Jose Romero, Interim Director of the Secretary of the Department of Health, as well as Secretary Johnny Key of Education. And I'm pleased to be joined by Sally Bennett, Superintendent of Rivercrest School District. And she'll be making some comments a little bit later. And glad to have the Surgeon General, Greg Bledsoe, with us today, who's an instrumental part of our team as well. First, I want to thank the Arkansas General Assembly for their quick response and their willingness to meet tomorrow through their Legislative Council to consider the proposal for testing, contact tracing, and follow-up, and work with the Marshallese as well as the Latinx community across the state. And that will be considered tomorrow at ALC, and I'm hopeful that that will be approved, and I appreciate the legislature's attention to that. I think it was just necessary for them to look at that more closely and have a little bit additional information. I did want to focus on education today, and I want to first make an announcement. Many members of the General Assembly, as well as educators across the state, have emphasized the importance of being able to have effective online education in addition to our in-classroom instruction. One of the key ingredients we know is that you have to have access to the internet, even in the rural areas of the state, and there's been a gap there because they don't have that coverage. And so today I'm announcing that out of my governor's fund that the CARES Act has provided to me, I'm allocating $10 million for Wi-Fi access points in our K through 12 schools. This will be free to students as it is allocated. And this gives a little bit more information on this. This comes from the governor's Emergency Education Relief Fund that is all federal dollars, no state dollars, all federal dollars. And the $10 million of this will be allocated for Wi-Fi access points. It will provide about 20,000 devices, and it will also provide 24 months of data, and all of this will be free of cost to the families and to the students. We'll be working with the vendors to be chosen by the school districts. They will choose what vendors they wish to use. AT&T and T-Mobile have signed up for that. Hopefully there'll be a third vendor as well. And they will extend, the two vendors have agreed to extend the same pricing structure to the districts if they decide to expand beyond the devices that are available to them. And this will be allocated to the school districts based upon their per student population. And so I know that Kathy will have some comments to, Sally will have some comments to make on that, as well as Secretary Key. In addition, there's a lot of discussion about, we're not doing as well in our testing as we have done in the past because our commercial labs have slowed down their production. And I've mentioned that we want to take control of this destiny more ourselves. And so the Department of Health has ordered BD Veritor point of care testing equipment. We've ordered 200 of these machines that will come with the testing kits and the supplies that are necessary. These are COVID antigen test systems. And I was led to BD Veritor by speaking with Admiral Girard, who said this is one that will have an availability in the future. So we seized that moment to grab these 200 machines, and they should be start coming in next week. We're still working on the plan to allocate those, the use of those, but when we have an opportunity to expand our testing capacity, we wanted to seize that moment. With that, let me go to our cases for today. Just a review over the weekend. Friday, we had 990 new cases. Saturday, 732 new cases. And Sunday, 642 new cases. And so that's really 2 days of declining cases, even though those numbers are high. Today, we're back up to 824 new cases. And so that brings our total cases to 39,447. We have 9 additional hospitalizations. bringing us to 489, and we have seven additional deaths that brings us to 408 deaths here in the state. We have 6,674 active cases, and our testing over the last 24 hours was up a little bit, much better, 5,929, and we'll go into that in a little bit more detail. The top counties are Pulaski County with 120 cases, Washington County with 62, Craighead County with 46, Benton County with 45, Sebastian 30, and Jefferson 29. Those are the top six counties. And with that, let's look at that from a graph standpoint, which puts us in perspective as to where this number of 800 and some is in relation to previous days. And so obviously that's too high. We need to continue to work to get that down. You see the rolling average, and we are still at about the high point. We went down and we're back up a little bit in terms of the rolling average high. And then in the currently hospitalized, we're holding our own under 500, but of course that number is likely to go up with the cases that we've had. The number of active COVID cases in Arkansas, we've seen that decline back up a little bit. And then if we look at our testing side of things, this is our 7-day rolling average of positive cases. And again, positive cases is a COVID test in which someone does not test negative, but they test positive. And so if we test 10,000 and we have 10% positivity, that means that we have 1,000 that test positive, 9,000 that test negative. And our goal is to keep that below 10% in terms of our average. Overall, from the beginning, we've had about 8% positivity, but right now we're a little bit below 10%. We hope that we can keep that trend going in that direction. And then let's look at our testing again. And this just helps us to see where we are in relation to our testing sources. And so our Department of Health lab had some glitches, and so they were down for a couple of days. They're back up to where really their height is, and so that's where we'd like to keep the Department of Health lab. That's done very, very well. They're in the white. UAMS has been a consistent partner, a little bit lower level, but they continue to produce the cases or the test. And then the commercial lab is where you see the variants. And so the high water mark consistently was whenever we were getting over 8,000 cases in a day. One day we had much higher than that. But the differential is the commercial labs, and that's slowed down, and we hope that that will go up, but there's not any guarantee of it with the pressure on our national commercial labs. And so with that, let me ask Dr. Romero for his comments, followed by Secretary Key.
Thank you, Governor. A little bit more granularity on this now. So our new cases, as mentioned before, were 824. 814 of those cases came from the community and 10 cases from correctional. Active cases, as mentioned, 6,674, 81 of those cases from nursing homes, 294 from correctional facilities, and 6,299 from the community. The governor has already mentioned the hospitalizations and deaths. Let me add to that that we've had an increase of seven individuals on a ventilator, and we currently have 110. With regard to the actual testing, as mentioned, the public health laboratory is back up, producing about 1,900 tests a day. We still have a deficiency from the private and commercial laboratories due to reagent supply and their increased number of testing. Overall, we've done 5,924 tests yesterday, and our total number so far is 164,001 tests, and I think we will reach 180, if not more, by the end of the month. So I'll turn it back to Secretary Key.
So the announcement today about the $10 million allocation for Wi-Fi access points is very important. I have two other things I want to cover before I come back to that. One is this week we have a survey out in the field to assess school districts' readiness for reopening the schools. Specifically, that survey is addressing their Ready for Learning committees, including the makeup of their committees, the frequency of their meetings and the communications to their parents and communities, the development of their district reentry plan, which would include the social distancing measures that they intend to incorporate, as well as communications of that plan. A percentage of students that are opting for the various delivery methods, whether they be on-site, blended, or completely virtual. And then supply of their personal protective equipment for students and staff. How much did they order? Do they believe it is sufficient? When will it arrive? Questions like that that are important for their communities to know and understand. And finally, the technology needs for implementing their Ready for Learning plan. Again, asking how much they needed to order and if that technology will be arriving on time. And then we plan to post those results on our division website. It will be very public. We want the communities in the state to understand the status of each district, and we'll also use that data to help reinforce our support for those districts that might need a little bit more assistance before we get ready for school to start next month. Also, one of the great unknowns for school districts has been what constitutes an adequate supply of PPE. So in that vein, the department is going to use approximately $1 million from the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund from the CARES Act to purchase a strategic stockpile of PPE. That way, if a school district runs short or has a supply chain issue, this reserve will help them bridge the gap until they can replenish their supply. Now back to the governor's announcement. I appreciate the governor's focus. As he has said many times, rural broadband across the state is important for many things, and it is critical for education. So under this announcement, we will work with these providers to make sure that the devices are CIPA, which is the Children's Internet Protection Act, that they are compliant with that. And that they also provide customer service, so parents and students can have tech support as they need it. We plan to issue a commissioner's memo tomorrow to provide additional details on how districts can access these devices, more information will be going out at that time to the superintendents. But at this time, I would invite Superintendent Bennett to come and give some remarks about the importance of broadband in this announcement today.
Thank you, Governor. This is a game changer. I appreciate the honor of being invited to be here today and talk about rural broadband access, because it truly is a significant factor in a rural school district such as mine. School districts across the state have been in the process of refining their reentry plans. We're excited to welcome students back to a safe learning environment for on-site instruction. This is where we feel students can best be served and we can meet all of their needs. However, part of our planning process entails providing for off-site instruction, and that has been our challenge, particularly in the rural setting. The Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, in partnership with the Arkansas Public School Resource Center, has provided a free digital curriculum and learning management system that districts can opt to choose to implement this school year. This curriculum has an offline component, but the full functionality of that relies on internet access, and this has been a great concern to many of us. So Rivercrest, my rural district, northeast part of the state, we cover 371 square miles. Internet in our homes has truly been a struggle that we've faced, and I, like many other superintendents in the areas of rural and airy parts of the state, have tried to be creative and look at different ways that we could address the situation. The digital divide is real and it is deep. And we have equipped buses with access points. We have talked to our providers. We've extended Wi-Fi access to our parking lots. But what has been announced today is monumental. It's truly going to make a difference for equity and access in our communities. For the first time since March, I don't think that that light at the end of the tunnel is a train. I think that we have an avenue now to fully serve our students for continued learning, whether they are on-site as we hope, or if we have to pivot to the off-site situation. We now have the technical change for instructional delivery. The door is now wide open for transformational change in education. I'm excited to be on the threshold of this innovative opportunity. The vision of the Arkansas Department of Education, with the full support of Governor Hutchinson and his administration, will be realized to transform Arkansas to lead the nation in student-focused education. Let's wear our masks, let's practice social distancing, and let's do whatever it takes on behalf of the students in our state. Governor, thank you so much for your care, your concern, and your connectivity.
Did you tell him where your district is?
Northeast Arkansas, near Wilson, Arkansas. If you get a chance, come on down I-55. We're right on the interstate.
Thank you, Superintendent Bennett, and I'll underscore what you said. We want to get ready for school. We've got still about 4 weeks. So let's reduce our cases. We want to work hard to wear our mask, to comply with the health guidelines so that we can set the right example for our students, we can prepare them for school, but also reduce the spread in our community so it'll make our schools a safer place to be. With that, we'll take any questions.
Can you clarify the Wi-Fi access points that are part of this grant? Are they going to be in the schools, or are they something that people take home?
They take home.
Okay.
They'll take them home. They will be able to utilize that access in their home environment, so they won't have to sit around the bus or go to McDonald's or some other place to try to have access and do their homework.
How many homes will that $10 million cover, do you think?
Well, it's 20,000 Wi-Fi access points, and so 20,000 units will be distributed, and we'll see how far that goes across the state. That will cover a lot, but here again, it could be supplemented by local funds because the carriers were asking to give the same price break point in the event the local school districts want to supplement that. Yes?
So this will cover roughly 20,000 homes. Do you have an idea of how many students will be left still needing?
Johnny, you have an idea on that? I think that's really something that's hard to map out, and so we don't have an exact number on that. And I think as we do these surveys and get more information, we might have more awareness on that as to whether there's a greater need. We hope that this will cover, but we will see, and if we need to supplement it with local funds or otherwise, we'll hopefully that'll be the case. Yes?
There's a lot of access points. So that requires that you are close enough to receive Wi-Fi, right? I mean, aren't there areas of the
cellular
state?
Cellular.
Sorry?
Cellular. It doesn't have to be Wi-Fi. It can be a cell phone access. So you do have to be in a place that you can get a cellular signal. And so it's still, there still will be gaps in the state that you don't get good cellular signal, but this adds a great deal that you don't have to have fiber, you don't have to have broadband. There, you can convert cellular into the Wi-Fi. Did I answer that right, Johnny? Is there any question remotely?
Yeah, Governor, this is Andrew with AP. Actually, I had two questions. The first one was for Dr. Romero. It was regarding a music festival in Fort Smith over the weekend. I believe the Peacemaker Festival that was cited by Alcohol Beverage Control for not following coronavirus safety measures, people not wearing masks. And I understand that there's a report of someone who was there who later tested positive. Wanted to see what the health department was doing in response to that, any concerns about there being other cases because of that. And separately, a question for you on the funding that legislative council is taking up tomorrow. Is there a backup plan that you have if it doesn't get approved again?
So in reference to the music festival in Fort Smith, I don't have details about the case that was positive, so I can't comment about that. We will be looking to see if there are any other cases. We are aware, of course, of the violations or laxness of face mask issues, and we'll be taking that into account as we go forward. Thank you.
And I'll add to that, I was aware, followed it from a distance, the concert in Fort Smith. I know everybody made a effort there. I think, as Dr. Romero said, I think we can learn some things from there. Probably have to look more closely at some of the requests that come in to make sure the compliance is in place as we approve or consider those plans. Andrew, you ask about the funding for the outreach to the Marshallese and Latinx community. This is really following up on the recommendation of the CDC to have specific resources addressed to those minority populations. It was agreed in working with the legislators that that would be expanded to those minority populations in multiple counties across the state as well. And you ask if there's a backup plan. Well, first of all, I'm very optimistic and hopeful that the Legislative Council will support that. You ask about a backup plan. Sure, there's always can be a backup plan. The problem with backup plans is that it backs you up. We're in a pandemic, we're in an emergency, and CDC talked about the urgency of it. There is an urgency of getting these resources out quickly, and so any delay is a delay in putting the resources into place. And so that's the problem with backup plans.
Governor, Mike McNeil at MagnoliaReporter.com. I'm wondering if there is any additional effort that's going to be put into asking the public not to go to mass gatherings. I bring this up because Sunday morning there was a mass gathering of 300 people in Magnolia, which four people got shot and wounded.
What do you call it, a mass what?
In Magnolia on Sunday morning, there was a mass gathering of 300 people at a street party at which four people were shot and wounded. And I'm wondering if there's going to be any additional effort made by the state to get out the message that mass gatherings might not be a great idea at this point.
Very good question. And the fact that we have very specific public guidelines that restricts mass gatherings, and if you get over a certain level, you've got to have special authority from the Department of Health. But whenever you're speaking of protest or public speech, it puts it in a different category. And as you know, the George Floyd protest, we had massive numbers of people that were protesting, and that's their right to do that. And so if that's the type of mass gathering, it's very limited as to what we can do in that regard, other than urge caution and social distancing and mask wearing a mask in those environments. Let's come back to the table here.
Governor,
we had a question.
With regard to the testing item and Legislative Council, if they fail to approve that, will that money have to be returned? And do you think legislators generally are taking this seriously?
Sure, I think they're taking it seriously. I believe that they care about the coronavirus and its spread in Arkansas. And you know, they're frustrated because it's an emergency and I have to exercise decision-making authority in this situation, and they want to be engaged in policy, and so I think they're acting in good faith, but the challenge is, you know, there is an urgency, and there might be 10 different ways to do something. I've got to pick the right way to do it, and it has to be funded, and Dr. Romero and his team helps to implement that. And so that's executive leadership that we're trying to accomplish. And I, you know, for example, It wasn't everybody that voted against that the last time that it would not be considered. There were a number of legislators that actually supported that. So obviously there's a diversity of opinion. I know they take it seriously, but they need to give some flexibility to the executive branch to actually execute on the appropriations that are out there so that we can implement the recommendations of the CDC in this situation.
Governor, I have a follow-up on just a moment.
Does the money have to be returned? Sure, it goes back into the, it hasn't been actually spent from the CARES Act fund, and so that could be allocated for different purposes down the road. We actually have, I think it's still close to 50% of the CARES Act money that is still available because we set aside some in reserve, we set aside some for the cities and counties. And so what we really need is to give the tools to the Department of Health and its partners to get the job done out there in the infrastructure of testing, contact tracing, personnel, and that's what we're trying to accomplish, and there is absolutely urgency for that because there's not any sign this is going to go away anytime soon until we get a vaccine. We're still going to be dealing with that. But the funds are there, it's just that they have to be returned to the federal government if we do not utilize those effectively in this fight against coronavirus. Let's go remotely.
Yes, Governor, I have a follow-up on the Peacemaker Festival in Fort Smith. We learned from the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, obviously, that they've issued the violation to Peacemaker and said that there were just not enough staffers or volunteers to address the individual concerns. So do you feel like there was enough done by organizers to ensure safety measures? And should there be more consequences for what happened? And or do individuals need to be held accountable? And can both of those be done?
I think our enforcement authorities handled it appropriately, issued a citation, and that will be dealt with. I'm more concerned about setting the path for the future, and absolutely, as you look at additional events that will come up in the future, we've got to make sure that there's adequate staff, volunteers to assure social distancing, give us the best chance at that, and educating the public as they're trying to enjoy an event. I know the sponsors worked hard, but the ball was dropped at some points through that concert, and we need to do better on that.
Should it have been approved ultimately, do you believe, or in retrospect, should it have not been approved?
The plan was good, it's execution. So we approved plans, we just got to assure better execution. Let's talk about the future. So come back to the table here to Leslie.
Concern expressed this morning about the testing package for Northwest Arkansas was that that contact tracing is rendered almost futile by the late return in test results. So what is your response to that, and will the antigen tests make that concern moot if we can get them out fast enough?
Well, I'll ask Dr. Romero to add to this, but let me start by saying contact tracing is a fundamental part of our strategy. And testing is a fundamental part of our strategy. It's one of those things that we can implement and it makes a difference out there. We've proven that it makes a difference as we went through it in the poultry industry and in different parts of Northwest Arkansas. And in where we started out in Heber Springs, our contact tracing brought that to an end. It was in Cleburne County. And so it does make a difference. The testing, if the results come in slower, it does make contact tracing more difficult, and sometimes it can be useless. I agree with that point. But while they talk about sometimes a test might be 7 days or longer, there's still tests that are coming in 2 days. The tests that come in 3 days, and the contact tracing absolutely is essential in those cases. So let's talk about the ideal environment that we want to achieve in testing and how contact tracing can be the second part of that strategy. I don't know of any state that has quit on contact tracing. And every state faces the same obstacle we do in delay in results, but nobody gives up on contact tracing. They don't throw up their hands and say, we got to quit doing it, because it still is useful and is helpful. We just have to do it better. And that's part of these resources, is to give in that one environment up there, better testing capability as well as tracing capability. And Dr. Romero, did you want to add to that?
So first, let me echo with the governor's statement. It's always optimal to have the contact tracing done when you get the report within 24 hours. But it doesn't mean that if you receive the report at 72, 5 days, 7 days, you're just going to throw it out the window. You're going to act on it. And yes, if it comes in 3 weeks later, it's not worth it. We need to keep going forward. We have a situation that has been handed to us. We have to adapt to that situation and make the best of it. And I think that's what we're doing at this point. With regard to the point of care testing that you asked, that's another piece of information now that will go into this bucket of number of positive cases we have in the state. We'll act on those. We will require that those results be transmitted to the health department quickly, because it is point of care testing. It'll have to be transmitted to us. Those will go into that big, if you will, bucket of contact tracing. We'll be able to act on those much more quickly, I hope. And again, we're trying to decrease our time from positive test to beginning contact tracing. We will get better. And as the governor said, no state has said, we're not doing this anymore, right? No one has thrown the baby, if you will, out with the bathwater. We're just going to have to go forward and deal with the situation as it comes.
Yes.
Starting idea of where some of those point of care machines might go once you get them?
Oh, there's a lot of ideas on that, and there's a lot of needs for those. But we want to give some more thought to that before we actually release a plan as to how, and we want to actually get those machines in hand before we start talking about where we're going to allocate those. Yes.
Secretary Key said a big question from districts is, what is an adequate supply of PPE? Do you have an answer for that, or a number of specific supplies that you're telling districts to try to accumulate?
The CDC gives those guidelines. I don't have them here with me, but the challenge is, for how long? Is it for the first 9 weeks? Is it for the first semester? And so you can purchase according to the guidelines, but it's also a balance of knowing how many students are going to come, you know, on site, how many students are going to opt for virtual. So it is a moving target for districts. And so in the feedback that we've been getting from superintendents, we felt like it would be worthwhile to have this reserve to help them in case their estimates might have proved to be off, or if they ran into supply chain issues.
Is there any question, other questions?
Governor Hutchinson, this is Jamie Weiss with 4029 News. You mentioned there's a lot of focus on this $7 million proposal that would help minority communities, including the Marshallese and Latinx, with contact tracing and testing. There are some other proposals for the CARES Act Steering Committee that were left on the table last week. Are you encouraging the CARES Act Steering Committee to meet more frequently to address some of these proposals, since you said that funding would be returned to the federal government if it's not used?
Are you speaking of this CARES Act Steering Committee, or are you referring to the
CARES Act Steering Committee? Yes, sir. Yeah.
The Steering Committee, of course, that's composed of Secretary Key is on there, Secretary Preston. So some of my administration, as well as I believe it is six legislators, three from the House and three from the Senate, that's on that CARES Act Steering Committee. They meet as needed, and they spend a lot of time in studying these issues before they actually send them to ALC or wherever they need additional action. And so I think they're meeting as they need to. And we're not just going to spend the money to spend the money, but we've got to evaluate each of it carefully. They're doing that, and I think they're proceeding well. There are a number of requests in the pipeline, but they have to be vetted and they have to be checked out as to make sure that it fits in with our overall plan to not just reduce the virus, but to meet the requirements, the spending requirements of the CARES Act that Congress passed. And so they will meet as needed. All right, with that, hearing
Governor,
that, yes.
One more question. With this weekend being a tax-free weekend, under the current eligible items, protective equipment is not included in tax-free items. Do you plan to make a change to that, especially with districts requiring face masks and or face shields?
That would take a legislative change. That's not something that I would do. There should be sufficient support for PPE from the state, from the federal money that's sent to the school districts directly. So I don't expect that to be changed, one, because it would take a legislative change to do that. With that, thank you all very much.